Welcome back to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, and Inside Lacrosse analyst, my old Blue Jay buddy, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dixie, there's a big weekend of games on tap, and we have a great interview with St. Joseph's head coach, Taylor Ray. So, Dixie, let's get it. So, Dix, I'm back from New Mexico. I was out in Santa Fe, and I think I mentioned last week that I think you asked me if I've seen any lacrosse, and the answer was a big no, nowhere. There's no hints of lacrosse in Santa Fe or Albuquerque until I was at the airport Saturday morning. I'm getting on a plane. It's probably like 8:30, 9 o'clock a.m. out there, two-hour difference, so it's like 11 o'clock East Coast time. And I had to do a double take. I looked in like one of the little tiny airport restaurants or bars or something, and there's two TVs, and one of them is tuned to lacrosse.
What airport did you fly out?
The Albuquerque airport.
Okay. Is that a big airport or no?
No, it's very small. I was in the Southwest terminal of it. And I walk over and I look and I go, wait a second. It's like 8:30 in the morning. Like, is this a local game? Is it on TV? And who's in the bar that said put lacrosse on? Because I don't remember what was on the other TV. I was such in shock. And I look and it was Marist playing Quinnipiac. And yeah. Well, that's a real college game. And I had a whole bunch of thoughts rushed through my head. First of all, someone in there said, please put that on, which was cool. Second, it was on ESPNU. And then I like the time change thing hit me. And I was like, how is this already like in the second half of this game? And then I realized they must have started early, like 10 o'clock on the East Coast was the start time. So I just want to applaud Quinnipiac administration, head coach Mason Poley, and even Keegan Wilkinson at Marist for agreeing to play in that. A lot of times fans, parents might say, like, why are we playing at 10 o'clock on a Saturday? Well, that's why. Those schools of that size need exposure, and the game needs exposure. The fact that I was just walking through the airport, I was looking for it. But a casual fan, a casual sports fan, that may have been the first time someone ever saw lacrosse on TV, and to see a good product like that on ESPNU is great. And maybe not there, but like, you know, it's on national TV, and someone in Montana or, you know, Ohio who had never even seen lacrosse before. And I applaud them for agreeing to do that and getting their game on TV. And, you know, my kid, we almost missed the plane because I was in the little bar standing like in that terminal watching the game. So pretty cool.
I agree. And when you're talking about your vacation and your flight back home and you did the whip, a question popped into my head. Where have the Flynn children been, especially Hannah? Because she'd like to be the guest whip last year. So maybe that's that popped into my head. We don't have to dress it. Just popped into my head. But no, you're right. You know, the MAC is a conference that could use exposure. And being, you know, playing 10 o'clock on a Saturday morning, maybe it's before the kids go out to practice or their games or, you know, get their weekends rolling. They can watch some lacrosse with their parents. I enjoyed the broadcast. It was the debut of Jules Henenberg, former Rutgers standout and current PLL All-Star, who did the analysis on the game. And I thought he did a really nice job. So that was cool to see. But no, it's, you know, Marist and Quinnipiac are two schools that maybe the folks in the Albuquerque airport had never heard of, let alone see them play lacrosse. And now they've been exposed to it. And, you know, in those parts of the country, oftentimes that's what it's all about.
Yeah, good stuff all around. Again, hats off to the administrations of those programs and those schools for getting that done. Inside Lacrosse came out with its first bracketology this week, Mark. And I think we must look at it. No surprise. I actually think this is how the top 20 should look, a lot more like this than what it currently looks like. So we have Maryland undefeated, number one, Princeton, number two, then followed by Georgetown, Yale, Rutgers rounds out the top five. 6 through 10 is Virginia, Penn, Cornell, Ohio State, Harvard, and that's your top 10. Now, again, this is looking at RPI, number of top five wins, the number of wins you have between teams in the 6 to 20, and then non-top 20 losses as well. And then North Carolina, Duke, Boston University, UMass, Denver, round out the last five teams that they looked at. These are teams considered to be in the top 15 at-large teams.
No, good first stab. This kind of stuff is always fun this time of year, where you try to piece the puzzle together and think like the NCAA committee. I feel like the RPI has been under attack over the last week or two. I know Patrick McEwen, a.k.a. Lax Film Room, has done a lot of work on that, and Terry Foy as well. The validity or lack thereof of the RPI. But this is a good first run when you look at what they put together. So that this is under the assumption that, you know, Stony Brook's going to win the America East. UMass is going to take the CAA. Boston University is going to take the Patriot. Richmond's going to take the SoCon. We all obviously know that all that can change. Let's take the SoCon, for instance. Let's say, I mean, geez, you already have Jacksonville running strong in that conference with a nice win over Duke. Richmond now owns a win over Virginia. You know, what happens to that conference if High Point wins the automatic qualifier? And that's just, we could have a whole podcast separate dedicated to talking about NCAA tournament possibilities, scenarios, et cetera. But that's just one conference to consider in terms of having a pretty nice body of work, you know, three teams.
And none of those teams fall into the top 15 at larges according to this bracketology. So,
right,
you know, a Jacksonville team or a Richmond team that loses that, the conference championship to either way. I mean, it could be, what if Jacksonville and Richmond play in the championship game and, you know, the loser might not make this according to this. Now, one interesting point. So let's say there are 10 AQs. I think 18 teams make it. And of the top 11, there are three AQs that would be of the teams that are in there. So there's an Ivy League team. There's a, you know, big Maryland's in the Big Ten and an ACC team. So 11 seems to be the cutoff here. So the North Carolina could conceivably be in this scenario, the last team in as an at-large. That's five Ivy League teams in there, Dixie.
Five Ivies, yeah, sure. Whew. I think that's going to shake out as they beat each other up over the next handful of weeks.
Fun to look at. Everybody go check that out, InsideLacrosse.com. You can do your own self-analysis. I'm sure Ted Moon's probably got his own whiteboard, along with our friends like Craig McMichael, got his own whiteboard.
Yeah.
Got this all he's doing.
They got their own algorithms cooking.
Yeah, love those guys.
Yeah.
Yes, for sure. One result from the midweek, Dix, that jumps off the page is Yale's win over BU, a top 10 game that happened in midweek. You don't see many of those this time of this point in the season. Yale with a huge first half.
Huge is an understatement. This game was 7-5 at the end of the first quarter. And then Yale scored 11 goals in the second quarter. BU couldn't keep pace. They only tallied one, 18-6 at halftime. And Yale was 18 of 28 shooting as a team. That's ridiculous. They were 18 out of 28. Yeah. 18 out of 28.
Is that good?
I think so. Impressive win by Yale. And I would like to talk about Yale's victory, the overtime victory over Penn this past weekend. I was able to watch that live. I watched the fourth quarter and two very talented teams. Yale, we talk about this a lot in this space, Yale's physicality and their blue collar. They made a couple plays down the end. There was an interception late in the fourth quarter in the Penn offensive zone that I thought was particularly cool. And then Yale was clearing, and I can't remember who the player was, but he just lowered his head and just ran a Penn player over. Like, I just think it speaks to the grittiness of Yale and the fact that they were at home and they're like, you know, look, we're going to win this game, you know? And they kind of made it a little bit of a street fight when I was watching. So impressive, two impressive victories for the Bulldogs in the span of 5 days.
Okay, Dixie, there's lots of great games this weekend, including a matchup in the Big Ten. But let's start with the action on Saturday, as we always do. Huge game in the SOCON, a game that we've been looking forward to in the SOCON for a long time. Number 17, Richmond, 6-3 overall, 1-0 in the SOCON, travels to Jacksonville to take on the number 11 ranked Dolphins, who are 9-2, 1-0 in the league, and that game will be at 11 a.m.
Yeah, I feel like everybody keeps waiting for the bottom to fall out of Jacksonville, and the Dolphins just keep on winning. Their latest victory over High Point last weekend, a game that was interrupted by weather, believe it or not. Did you know that?
No, I did not.
Yeah, you're probably on a plane when it was going on.
Well, it's the turbulence.
But no, it was a great game and a huge win for Jacksonville on the road, and just able to hold them off after the weather delay, etc. And they're facing a Richmond team that is riding high after really, probably the biggest win in program history at this point against the University of Virginia team ranked, second or third, depending upon what poll you were looking at. So both teams come in with huge momentum. And, I think it's safe to say that unless something dramatic happens, Jacksonville, Richmond, High Point, they'll all be in the SOCON tournament. This is all just a matter of seeding at this point. You want to put yourself, you want to get that number one seed. And this game is going to have, I think, huge implications toward that one.
There's also a huge game in the Northeast Conference. Before we get to that, Bryant, St. Joseph's battle, and your thoughts on that game. Let's bring in St. Joseph's Hawks head coach, Taylor Ray. We're pleased to be joined on the Defiant Dixie podcast with St. Joseph's Hawks head coach, Taylor Ray. Coach Ray, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, Coach, you guys are off to an 8-2 start on the season, and I say off to an 8-2 start when you realize there's only, 4 or 5 games left in the season. It's crazy how once you hit that conference slate, people are like, wow, we only have, like a month or 6 weeks left to go in the season. How would you best characterize 2022 thus far for the Hawks?
I think it's been a great season. Obviously we wish we had won a couple more close games, but we've got our fair share of bounces along the way as well. So it's been a very positive year. I like the way the team has been coming together on both sides of the ball. And obviously having Zach Cole control the middle of the field has helped us in so many games. So it's been a great start. I like where the team is at and where the guys are, how the guys are feeling going into this weekend's matchup.
So you mentioned Zach Cole at the faceoff dot, obviously a strength of your team. And we'll talk about Zach, as we continue on in the conversation. Outside of the faceoff, under your leadership, what are you most proud of? In other words, what do you feel like St. Joe's lacrosse is most known for at this stage?
Great question. I mean, I'm most proud of the fact that when I started, the program was in a vastly different place. And a lot of the progress that we've been able to make has been a result of the increased level of support from the school. You're only going to be as good as your administration really allows you to be. And there's certainly excellent support for the lacrosse program here at St. Joe's. But I just think, we've established ourselves as a competitor within our conference, a place where high school players can go and have championship aspirations and try and win a conference title and have winning seasons and compete with anyone on your schedule. And I think that's what we've started to create here on Hawk Hill.
You mentioned that you're 8-2, but you're a couple of one goal decisions from being undefeated. And yet sometimes the ball bounces your way, sometimes it doesn't. When you look at your team stats, yours versus your opponents, there's a lot of things that are pretty even. But the thing that stands out the most and jumps off the page when you look at them is ground balls and faceoff advantage. So again, we talked about Zach a little bit, but I really want to get your, how much he means to your program, how much he means to your systems and both your offense and your defense and controlling the ball and your success.
Yeah, he's definitely integral at all over the field. You know, when he's winning faceoffs and we're collecting ground balls, and you know, we'll use him in a number of different sort of substitution scenarios that we think we might be able to gain an advantage in. So that certainly helps. So you get the possessions and some of the scenarios you can create when you're winning faceoffs, but it also means you're not playing nearly as much defense. So sometimes the other team can get a little bit antsy and, you know, maybe they start to press a little bit. So we think that that helps us too. But more than anything, he just leads the team. He's very composed. He doesn't get up or down during games. He could win 10 in a row or lose 3 in a row, and he's going to have the exact same even keel approach to the next faceoff. And I think that's very, very grounding for our team when, you know, you go on runs in games the way that lacrosse games go, when you can kind of turn to, you know, your most impactful player and you look at his approach and you say, all right, you can just take a deep breath and get ready for the next play, kind of hit the reset button and play the next play. And Zach definitely leads us in that area as well. He's not an overly vocal guy, but when he does say things, his words have impact, and, you know, guys just kind of are drawn to the professionalism and the approach that he takes. So it's more than just the possessions and the plays that he makes. It's the leadership that he brings as well.
It's one thing to get the ball 75% of the time, but it's another thing to do something with it. And when I look at St. Joe's offense, very balanced scoring, featuring 5 players with 20 points or more. What's the offensive philosophy, and how do you share the love, share the wealth, get those guys to buy into that mindset?
I think that's exactly it. You know, it's share the ball. You know, we've had days where Matt Bomer, who's our leading scorer, comes out of the game with a single assist. We've had days where he comes out of the game with 6 points. You know, I think the guys on our offense are really unselfish. They share the ball. They don't care who gets the credit. And they're all different players. You know, Bomer's a very different player than Carter Page or Levi Anderson or Tucker Brown. And I just think we have really good balance both above and below the goal. We're not asking one guy to take the ball in his stick and quarterback the offense on every possession. We move the ball pretty well at times. And when the ball is moving and the offense is flowing, that's when we tend to see the best results. So I think one thing that I've enjoyed about this year's offensive sort of construction is that there's balanced scoring between the midfield and the attack. You know, Tucker Brown is our leading scorer, our second leading scorer with 31 points, and he's a midfielder. And Levi Anderson bounces between attack and midfield. And Austin Strazula has really come on this year. I couldn't be more proud of Austin as a fifth-year senior to be playing the way that he has been playing. So I just really like the balance and the fact that we're not saying, okay, get the ball to Matt Bomer behind the goal every possession and you run the offense. You know, it's a shared duty between whatever 6 guys are out there. And I think that's been really productive for us.
I'll switch gears a little bit. You know, oftentimes when people think about the hotbeds of lacrosse, they might say Baltimore, Long Island, upstate New York, Canada even. But Philadelphia has produced so many great players. You see it at the pro level, you see it at the college level, and obviously the college lacrosse scene is robust in Philly. But how doesn't Philadelphia get the respect it deserves?
That's a good question. I think when people talk about the hotbeds of high school lacrosse, Philly definitely gets thrown in there. Maybe not as much with the traditionalists, but certainly with the people who've been around the game on the East Coast for the last 10 to 15 years. So I don't feel like there's you know, a lack of respect for lacrosse in Philly. You know, I don't necessarily feel that that's the case. Obviously Baltimore, Long Island, upstate New York tend to be the areas that people throw around the most, but I think there's definitely some love out there for Philly lacrosse.
D-Fly is always trying to start beef, always trying to start beef.
I grew up in Wilmington So I'm like a Philly suburb guy. So I'm just trying to, I wanted to hear him agree with me, basically.
I mean, I would maybe 20 years ago. I feel like recently, though, there's been a lot of good players to come out of the Philly area, a lot of good high school teams. You know, you look at the Under Armour games, the Philly teams have done well. So I feel like they're earning their respect. They're due for sure.
I agree, Coach. Well said. The automatic qualifier is oftentimes a hot button of discussion when it comes to college lacrosse and the ratio of men's Division I teams playing to the ratio of NCAA bids that are out there. A lot of folks will say it's skewed or it's, you know, it's out of whack or out of balance. But at a school like St. Joe's, in a conference like the Northeast Conference, how do you utilize the automatic qualifier to your advantage in terms of recruiting? And then also just coaching your guys up, knowing that you probably have to win that AQ mm-hmm. to get to the big dance.
Yeah, I think what we'll sometimes do when we're talking with recruits or guys on our team, even, you know, is you look at the landscape and you say there's, you know, there's 9 or 10 conferences depending on the year and how things shift that get an AQ. You know, if there's 16 or 17 teams that make it, you know, you're looking at, you know, 9 spots most likely for at large teams. And the ACC is going to get 4 or 5 pretty much on a given year. So you got 4 left. Where are they going? You know, on a strong year like this for the Ivy, they might get 3 or even 4 teams. The second place in the Big Ten is going to get one, you know, depending on what happens in the Big East, they might get one. So like you know that it's not, your chance of getting one of those at large bids is going to be slim. And so you design your schedule to play the most competitive schedule that you can to maybe give you a shot, depending on how the teams on your schedule do in their seasons. But you go into it knowing that your best pathway to the NCAA tournament is going to be through winning that at large bid in the conference tournament. And so when you're looking at schools as a recruit that you might want to go to, I think that's something that should be considered. Is this program in the hunt for the AQ year after year? And I feel like we are, you know, we've won the regular season title 5 different times and we haven't gotten it done in that championship game. But you know that if you come to St. Joe's, you're going to be in the hunt for it. And that's really what keeps you motivated year round. If you're at a place where you struggle to make your conference tournament or you've never been in that championship game, sometimes that light at the end of the tunnel can shrink. And it certainly is a bright light here. We know we're going to be in the hunt for it year after year. And that drives our guys each and every day at practice and in the fall and in the weight room and so on.
You played your college ball at Duke and this week you faced your college head coach, Mike Pressler. I know you've done it several times in years past, but what's it like to face one of your mentors on game day?
It was a lot stranger the first time than it is now the 14th or 15th time. You know, I talked to Coach Pressler this morning. I talked to him after their LIU game this past weekend. You know, we talk as regularly as anyone in the profession that I speak to. So this week will be a little weird. There'll be radio silence for most of the week. Both of us will be, you know, obviously looking forward to the competition on Saturday. But I think both of us are happy when the game is over and we can go back to cheering for each other instead of rooting against each other.
How would you best characterize the Northeast Conference in 2022?
To be determined, I guess. I think things have been a little strange at the start here, just with some of the scores and the way things have shaken out. But, you know, I told our team going in that I fully expected this to be, you know, another extremely competitive year. And I think, you know, you look at the league top to bottom, you know, Bryant, you know, for all of the reasons that were mentioned was the, you know, the preseason number one team in the league. They returned everybody. They're the reigning champs and deservedly so. And then you know, you kind of have us and Hobart who returned a lot as well. You know, Hobart had some fifth year guys for the first time, I think, this year, as they've, there were some grad programs that they were able to get access to. So they've got a really, really strong team. And then, you know, Mount St. Mary's was kind of a question mark, and LIU returned a lot of the same guys. They had the offensive and defensive player of the year in our league from last season. And, you know, they graduated a few guys, but we figured everyone sort of figured they were going to be in the hunt as well. And then Mount St. Mary's was a totally new team, but they started off the year strong, you know, knocking off Navy, and they had a nice win, I think, over UMBC a few weeks ago. So, you know, they've been streaky and competitive with everyone. And then, you know, you got, for who am I forgetting here? You know, Sacred Heart, Wagner, and Merrimack. Merrimack, you know, the inside lacrosse guy said was going to be the most improved team in the country. So that certainly was something we talked about in the preseason. And then, you know, Sacred Heart picked up some transfers, and Wagner, they were our first conference game. They've got the best team that they've had in the 8 years that we've been playing them. And, you know, they just knocked off a Sacred Heart team who just beat Hobart. So I think our league is very much in flux, and a lot is going to be determined over the last few weeks of the season. But it's a competitive league. Every weekend, you're going to see exciting games and close games.
Coach, if there was a game that, you know, fans could have circled on the calendar early in the preseason, it would be this week when you play Bryant. You're both 3-0 in the preseason rankings. You mentioned that they were at the top. You were the other team that got votes and were second in the preseason poll. It's a big game. What will be the keys to the Hawks to get a win on Saturday?
Without trying to give away too much information, you know, we're going to have to do well at the faceoff. You know, I think Brian has two excellent faceoff guys. The first round last year, they were coming off like a 2-week COVID hiatus, and we were able to kind of dominate that area. The second round, they got the better of us and scored some goals off the faceoff. So we'll be doing our best to try and ensure, you know, those things don't happen again. I think we're not going to play a whole lot differently than we have been playing so far this year. What we've been doing has been working pretty good. You know, Bryant's a team that's shown man and zone over the years, so we'll have to prepare for those things. They've shown a 10-man ride at times, so we'll have to prepare for that stuff. You know, I think from a personnel perspective, we know their guys pretty well. They have pretty much the same offensive group as they did a year ago. So we'll have to have a good game plan for how to stop those guys. And, you know, Marco Rourke is an exceptionally talented player, but he's got a great supporting cast as well. So it's not like we can just say, all right, we got to take O'Rourke out of it and make the other guys beat us, because the rest of their team is certainly capable of doing that. So we'll have to control the ball off the faceoff. We'll have to not let Bryant get going in transition. They are an athletic team that breaks out of their defensive end very quickly. And we'll have to continue to put the ball in the back of the net. You know, we're scoring, you know, a pretty good amount of goals this year, you know, more than we've ever scored before. So we need that to continue. And you know, Bryant's had a goalie who's been hot the last few weeks. So we'll have to make sure we don't take any ill-advised shots. We'll have to take good shots and make sure we put them to good spots.
Off topic, Coach. And our last couple questions will be kind of not lacrosse related. Best cheesesteak in Philadelphia.
Best cheesesteak in Philadelphia.
Or best cheesesteak, period. I mean,
Well, there's a place, I forget the name of it. I should know it. Delisandro's, but I have to give Larry's a shout out because they're right on campus and it is a darn good cheesesteak. Larry's is Kobe Bryant's old stomping grounds. So they have a Kobe special you can get that's pretty darn good.
This is a throwback question, but what's your go-to team restaurant on the road?
We tend to go to whatever the recommendation we get from somebody local. So it varies place to place. We're not a big box store when it comes to restaurants. We tend to go to the mom and pop places that get recommended to us by the people in that area.
Love
but it's always chicken parm. So it's you know, chicken parm and salad and a couple other things. So it's pretty simple. Our guys aren't picky. As long as they have enough food, they're happy.
it's a good recipe for most college teams. All right, last question. We ask all the coaches this, and we haven't been – we're not looking for coach speak, but answer as you like. You know, very stressful during the season, extremely busy. So when you want to try to tune out for an hour or so and just relax, what do you like to do during the season to do that? Is it you listen to music? Do you work out? Do you watch – movies, TV, what is it? What does Coach Ray like to do to relax when he gets a chance?
It's opposite ends of the spectrum, either work out or like binge watch TV. You know, when I get into something on TV, I tend to like, it usually ruins my sleep for like a couple of days until it's done. I watched that, the 70 episodes of that show Money Heist over like a week and a half, and it crushed me. I was up till like, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning a couple of times. And I never stay up that late because I'm like, I just need 15 more minutes of the next episode. So, but no, definitely exercise. I definitely am a guy who is happier when I'm able to get some lifting or running in. Usually tend more to the lifting side, although I should be getting on the treadmill more than I do, or binge watching TV and trying to relax.
All right, what other shows are you binge watching?
Yellowstone. I worked through that one. Ozark. I hadn't watched the last two seasons, so the, I think it was the third season, and then that little 7 thing. And a couple friends of mine got me watching Billions. So that's another one that I enjoy when I can.
And you got great taste in TV. Those are the same shows that Dixon and I watch.
Yeah. Ray, I think the second half of Ozark drops April 26th.
That's good.
And I didn't think that was happening
like
until
3 nights straight.
Yeah, I didn't think that was until the summer. So that was like, I heard that. If it is actually true, I did hear April 26th.
Coach Ray, we appreciate your time. Best of luck to you this week against Bryant and throughout the season. And we hope to talk to you later this season. Thank you.
Thanks, fellas. Appreciate the time. All the best to you both.
Gotta like what Coach Ray has done with this St. Joseph's program, Dix.
Year in and year out, they are at the top or near the top of the Northeast Conference. He said it. You know, they've got 5 regular season NEC titles since he's been there, but they've only been to the NCAA tournament once. So, you know, that's a team, that's a program still trying to figure out how to sustain success. And in a league where really it's just the automatic qualifier is going to go to the NCAA tournament, you know, that has to be frustrating when you win the league in the regular season, but then can't close the deal in the conference tournament. I didn't have the stones to ask him about that. Yeah, I thought that might've been a little too, you know, he gave us so much other terrific information and great answers, but that's got to be a point of frustration. And then you got Bryant, the team last year that gave Virginia all they could handle in the NCAA first round, and really the heavy favorite coming into this year to win the Northeast Conference and go back to the NCAA tournament. But you know, it's pretty amazing when you've got a guy like Zach Cole from St. Joe's at the faceoff dot winning 75% of his faceoffs. That's incredible when you can get those extra touches, get those possessions. So this should be a really good game this weekend between St. Joe's and Bryant. The game is in Philadelphia at Sweeney Field. And, you know, it's interesting when you beginning of the season, when they beat Penn State 15-13, you're kind of like, I think the automatic reaction is, well, I guess Penn State must be down. You know, there's never really, and St. Joe's could have been any team, you know, that was the underdog that day playing from a conference that typically only gets the automatic qualifier to the NCAA tournament. And yeah, you know, maybe Penn State is down 2-9 right now. They got a lot of injuries. They continue to scrap, but you know, they're struggling a little bit right now, and St. Joe's is a pretty good, darn good team. So we'll see how things shake out this weekend.
Number 13, Boston U, coming off of a midweek loss to Yale, will stay with an Ivy League opponent, face the number three Princeton Tigers, who are 7-2 after their 18-7 win over Marist on Tuesday. The game's at 1 o'clock. Another really strong non-conference test for the Terriers.
So Boston team is not ducking anybody. They've played a tremendous out of conference schedule, Harvard, Yale, and now Princeton. And this is a Boston team that's in a great position in the Patriot League. They're in contention for the number one seed. They have some tough games coming up over the next few weeks. But, you know, if you look at the Patriot League, you know, you've got BU playing Yale and now Princeton in the month of April. Loyola will play Georgetown at the end of the month. The Patriot League doesn't shy away from anybody in terms of competition. And Princeton had everything that they could handle this past weekend in a win over Dartmouth. And then they, had a really terrific effort in that Tuesday game against a pretty good Marist team. So this is big, you know, this is probably bigger for BU in terms of getting a quality out of conference victory. Princeton owns that win over Georgetown. That's going to come in handy on Selection Sunday. BU, if they should not win the Patriot League automatic qualifier, a win over Princeton will go a long way in terms of a quality out of conference win to put them in that at large conversation.
Shifting to the ACC, Dix, two teams who got themselves off the mat, so to speak, with big wins last weekend and back in sort of the national picture. Number 13, Notre Dame, still under 500 on the season at 3-4, but evened out their ACC record with a big win over Syracuse. We'll travel to Tobacco Road to play number 15, Duke, who's coming off of a big win over their rival, North Carolina. That game is at 1 o'clock.
When you look at each of these victories, how about the individual performances? Jake Taylor sets a career goal record or a single-game goal record in South Bend with 8 goals over Syracuse. And I think now the last three meetings between Notre Dame and Syracuse, the Orange has scored like 60 goals or something. I'd have to look that stat up, but they have dominated Syracuse over the last three meetings. And then Duke got 7 goals from Brennan O'Neill in their big win over the University of North Carolina Tar Heels. So two outstanding individual performances. I thought Mike Adler was really good between the pipes for Duke against Carolina, as was Colin Krieg at the other end. But, Brennan O'Neill kind of supplied the offense for the Blue Devils to get them on their way to victory. So, Notre Dame, Duke, whenever they get together, it's always tough battles. Obviously Duke has beaten the Irish in the national championship games, right? Yeah, plural, I think. So this will be a terrific matchup. And, we've seen the bracketology for Terry Foy. I mean, if it holds, typically, Coach Ray even said it, the ACC, they always get 5 teams in. They might be 2 or 3 bid league, at this stage. So every game counts, and it'll be a battle between Duke and Notre Dame.
Another big test in the ACC on Saturday. A slew of great games. Number 16, North Carolina, looking for that first ACC win still. They'll play number 7, Virginia, who is looking to bounce back after a crazy upset loss to Richmond last week. But they're 3-0 in the ACC. The game's at 2 o'clock, Dix. Give me your thoughts.
Yeah, North Carolina really would love to get that first ACC win. And they're going to be motivated, after being handled at home by Duke. Hats off to the North Carolina men's basketball team, beating Duke in the Final Four. And then, what a heartbreaking loss in the national championship game to Kansas in men's basketball. But it was nice that they were able to send Coach K into retirement a game early. I know you probably didn't like that, but there's a lot of people that did.
What game are you talking about?
The basketball game.
I didn't watch it.
You didn't watch that?
No. I've been watching lacrosse and traveling.
It's unlike you. But Carolina team motivated, looking, they just got to find some offense and some consistent offense. And then Virginia, the health status of Petey Lasala and Matt Moore, two players that left the Richmond game with injuries. I've said it all year, maybe not a better 1-2 punch in the country than Matt Moore and Connor Schellenberger for Virginia. But, underneath that star power is where you need supplemental scoring and supportive scoring. And Virginia wasn't really able to get that against Richmond, and they struggled at the faceoff after Lasala went down with the injury. And they were thwarted by a hot goalie, Zach Vigue, son of Gene Vigue.
Yes.
Shout out Gene Vigue.
Jays.
From back in the Hopkins football days when you and I were roaming the campus of Homewood. The
pride of South Jersey.
So these are two teams with a lot to prove. And we'll see how Virginia deals with a little bit of adversity, if Moore and or Lasala aren't able to go this weekend.
And rounding out Saturday's schedule in the Ivy League, there's a top 10 battle with number 10 Harvard, 7-1, 2-0 in the Ivy League, travels to Ithaca to take on the number 6 Cornell Big Red, 8-1 overall, 2-1 in the Ivy League. And that game will face off at 3 p.m.
Yeah, what's Harvard up to now? 10th in the poll?
10th.
They rank number 10. Quietly ascending the rankings. Got a scare from Colgate this past weekend, winning 7-6. A couple of nice saves down the stretch by their goaltender to preserve that victory. And, Cornell, good group. We had Connor Busick on a couple of weeks ago. Congratulations to Connor on his retirement from playing in the Premier Lacrosse League. The Ivy League has been great this year. Been really entertaining, close games, physical games, fun to watch. I'm sure this one will be no different.
Okay, so let's move on to Sunday. But first, you're calling a game, but you have a very busy week. You're going to be on TV a lot, right?
Oh, my God. So we're recording this. So this will drop Friday morning. So last night I was at Maryland calling the Penn State-Maryland women's game for Big Ten Network. Then on Saturday I'll be working for CBS covering the Army game, Army versus Colgate. And I think after I get done that game, this is how old I am and how long I've been doing this, I think I would have now called a lacrosse game for every entity that has ever broadcast lacrosse. So I get the Colgate Army game, and then I'll jet back after the game to get home and get some sleep, to rest up for the huge BTN Sunday night game, Rutgers at Maryland. Full weekend for me broadcasting.
Well, let's get into that, discussing that game. That's a huge game. Number 4 Rutgers, 10-1, 2-0 in the Big Ten, at number 1 Maryland. Terps are undefeated and look like a juggernaut. Game's at 7 o'clock. You'll be on the call on BTN. How do you break that one down?
Who can slow Maryland down? I know Princeton did a decent job of it. Notre Dame did a decent job of it. But outside of that, Maryland has just been blitzing teams. And it didn't play particularly well this past weekend at Michigan and still won by 8 goals, 20-12. Can Rutgers slow these guys down? They've got the goaltender that can keep them at bay. They've got good poles. Ethan Rawls, a good long stick middie. And I think the defense for Rutgers is much improved from 2021 till now. But Maryland is just a different animal. And just slowing them down and giving themselves a chance to win the game in the fourth quarter, which I think can happen. I'm interested to see how Maryland defends Rutgers. Some smaller guys, quicker. They love to feed the inside. They did that repeatedly in the first half against Hopkins and had success. And then you got the tallest player in college lacrosse, Mitch Bartolo, at 6'6". So I'm interested to see how, Maryland can defend the Rutgers Scarlet Knights. But as most of these games with such talented teams, it'll probably come down to the plays in the middle of the field. Ground balls, face-offs, hustle plays, juice plays. And if Rutgers can get more of them, I think that's just going to bolster their spirits. Rutgers is – they have not beaten Maryland since they've entered the Big Ten, since the Big Ten Lacrosse Conference was formed. and got an interesting note from Jordan Ozer, the outstanding SID for Rutgers. Rutgers has a 2017 all-time Big Ten lacrosse record, but they're 0-9 against Maryland. So this will, you know, you better believe that Rutgers is looking at this as an opportunity to get their first ever win, ever Big Ten conference win over, you know, over the University of Maryland.
Big game Sunday night. I'll be tuning in. I've been loving these games, even though last week's game was not the outcome I was looking for as a Blue Jays fan. Dix, I just want to remind people they can play fantasy lacrosse on insidelacrosse.com. It's a lot of fun. They're picking more games, and you play against your friends, check yourself against your rankings. Easy to fill out. You can even get a little picture of who, snapshot of who your guys are if you want to share them with your friends or social media, if you're that kind of a person. Go check that out.
Has that been going for you? Have you won anything?
I haven't won anything yet.
No.
The best I've done, I figure I finished like tied for 18th out of like 140 people. Not bad. It's not me. I picked the right guys. My guys just don't perform very well. They're just not playing very well. So,
but it's not you.
Yeah, of course not. I mean,
it's not your eye for talent or lack thereof. Yes,
yeah, I'm picking great lineups and always usually have like a dollar to spare. So, all right, Dixie, it's time for the give and go. And I think I have a good one this week.
It's always dangerous when you think.
TV sitcoms, all time, your favorite shows. Now, a lot of the list is a lot of, you know, some of the familiar ones, but I also made a list of like three that I liked since I was a kid or I've watched that sort of my underrated ones.
Yeah.
And I'll start there. 30 Rock. I just felt like the jokes came so fast in that show that you really had to pay attention, almost too much, but love right. That show. But these didn't make my top five. These are ones that are.
These are honorable mentions.
These are honorable mentions. The Bob Newhart Show.
This is my brother Daryl.
Yeah, so you remember. And the show MASH. You know, that's a really old show, but I remember watching that. I was a kid, and my older brothers would watch that show, and it was always pretty good. And then the reruns were on forever. But those are my sort of honorable mention. And I have a long list here. But those are my three honorable mentions. Okay, here's my top five. I'm not sure exactly what the order is, but it's some order of this. So number five, I'm going to go with The Office.
Oh, only number five? I thought that was going to be number one.
Number four, Curb Your Enthusiasm. Hilarious. Larry is the best. We talked about him as the Dave Grohl of comedy. Number three, Cheers.
Good one.
Ted Danson, coach, Woody Harrelson. Great, great. Number two, The Simpsons.
Is that really a sitcom?
Yes.
It's a cartoon.
It's a sitcom. It's a cartoon, but it's a sitcom. It's a comedy sitcom. Situation comedy. And
number one takes place in Springfield. Number one is Seinfeld. You're so predictable.
So
that's all right. I mean, that's a good list.
All right. So I imagine that some of your top five is the same, but I want you to try to think off the out of the box a little bit. Maybe give me some of your honorable mention picks.
Yeah. So I love sitcoms. At one point, NBC had like that incredible lineup. What was it? Cheers, Night Court, Seinfeld. Was Seinfeld in that mix?
I don't know. I think it's like The Cosby Show, Night Court.
That's right. Yeah. So
I mean, that was Seinfeld started was later. That must-see TV kind of
must-see TV. That's it.
On Thursday nights, and then Frasier? Seinfeld and Frasier, I think, sort of took over that like after the Cheers, like in the mid-90s, kind of early 90s. Friends, Seinfeld, and I think Frasier were like the shows.
Yeah. Never liked Friends, never watched Friends. 30 Rock, I'm with you. It was good in the beginning, and then it just got like annoying. I don't know, Tina Fey bugged me after a while. Alec Baldwin bugged me. After all, Alec Baldwin really bugs me these days, but back then it was just kind of irritating. Okay, sitcoms. I love Happy Days. Happy Days. I love
Friendship. Way back. All right.
I mean, it is such a farce. Because I think about when I used to watch, when you would be done your dinner right before you started your homework, if you got some TV time in syndication, it would be, you know, like Happy Days and Laverne and Shirley always seem to run back to back on the old WBFF channel 45 or something. I love Happy Days, man. I'll go on YouTube and just look at Happy Days. I mean, it was just such a innocent show. With some weird meanings, and the Fonz was just so ridiculous. But Henry Winkler's like an awesome guy. I had an opportunity to meet him. I had the opportunity to meet him at Heartfest back in 2004 or five. The event run by the Ciccarone Cardiology Center, our good friend Roger Blumenthal. He was the guest of honor 1 year, and he was just such a nice guy.
He's the nicest guy in Hollywood.
I love Happy Days. I used to love a show called Who's the Boss with Tony Danza. Yeah.
Angela. I mean,
it was horrible. It was a horrible show.
That's the show that brought us Alyssa Milano.
Milano. Oh, yeah. I definitely like, I didn't really care. I didn't really, you know, didn't watch it for her back in the day. But as she got older, she's definitely one of my celebrity crushes. But I don't know. Mona was funny. And just the whole premise was kind of wacky. But it was good. It worked. And you want to talk about syndication growing up on sitcoms, that collection of Good Times, the Jeffersons, Different Strokes, all of those outstanding. I mean, just were great.
All in the Family.
Archie I never Bunker. Watched All in the Family. I never watched that.
My dad loved him, some Archie Bunker.
Meathead. Meathead, Archie
Gloria.
Bunker. Yeah. Great show. Sure. But no, I'm with you. You know, Seinfeld, all-time great. I'm not as big of an Office fan as you are. My brother's also a huge Office fan. I like it, but I think I stopped watching it maybe after two seasons. Trying to think of some others. I love the Goldbergs. I watch the Goldbergs every week or watch it on demand because it's set in the 80s. And, you know, I'm an 80s kid, so... Love the Goldbergs. I think that's enough, right? I think that's a good.
You ever watch Everybody Loves Raymond?
No, I never watched. I never watched the CBS stuff.
Same.
Never watched Big Bang Theory. Never watched Everybody Loves Raymond.
Rocks from the Sun? What was that show?
30 Rock. Never watched that.
Rock from the Sun.
Never watched that.
Yeah. Never watched CBS. I never watched those. Same here.
I never watched King of Queens. Never watched that.
Yeah, never.
Never watched them. No. And yeah, extremely popular, but never watched them. I love Night Court. I thought Night Court was great. John Larroquette's character. What was that guy's name? Dan Fielding, maybe. He was funny.
Remember Benson?
I remember Benson, of course. Robert Guillaume.
I was talking with my father-in-law. We were talking about... we're talking about Lyle Alzado, and he went on to acting the linebacker for the Raiders or something, whatever. Yeah. Like, and then there was on Webster,
Alex Karras. Yeah, sure. I did not like Webster. Webster was annoying. Manuel Lewis was annoying.
And there was another guy. Oh, I think I was thinking like Bob Uecker was on Mr. Belvedere. So like it was like that time where those guys came out of like the Miller Lite commercial, like the taste great, less filling, and these athletes became. Like sitcom dads or stars, which was just looking back on it, really funny.
You know another show I really like? Saved by the Bell. I love Saved by the Bell. That used to be it used to be on TBS or TNT like every morning. Every morning. It wouldn't matter. You just turn that on and there's like old Saved by the Bell episodes. I like Saved by the Bell. I like cheesy stuff.
You do like cheesy stuff. You do like cheesy stuff. And I think that's a great place to stop. We'd like to thank our guest this week, St. Joseph Hawks head coach Taylor Ray. Best of luck this week against Bryant and throughout the season. If you like what you heard, please like us on your favorite podcast app and leave a review. Tell a friend and share the love. It's free. We always love to hear from you. So give us a shout out on Twitter He's at Dixon Lacrosse, and I'm simply at D_FLY. Remember, stay positive, test negative, and as always, enjoy the games.